joining us, and welcome to another edition of Answers Network. I'm your host, Alan Cardoza. For those of you that have been listening, sending in questions and comments, thank you so much. And please continue to help spread the word that every Monday from 11 a.m. to noon Pacific time, this show brings on special guests that can inspire, educate, and in some cases entertain, while bringing answers and options to making our lives happier, healthier, and more successful. I also want to thank those that have taken the time to send in more questions. What we're doing now is that we are taking your questions and we are putting them directly to the person that can answer them best. And that's one of the things that we have done today. So now remember, and if you can't listen live, all of our shows, including this one, can be found at answers.network. So I would also really appreciate it if you could all do me a big favor. Please forward one of our shows to your social media group and to someone you know who can benefit from a particular subject. This is one powerful way that we can make a positive influence in the world together. Now, we may have a co-host that's going to pop in with us a little bit later, but for the time being, we are going to get started. And I want to tell you that our initial question today came from Kathleen in Highland Park, Illinois. And she asks, I have two children, ages 9 and 12, and feel like I'm losing control. When I try to set boundaries, I feel like the teachers at the public school that they're attending are sabotaging my ability to parent my children. My 12-year-old has said no to cleaning her room, turning off the TV, and coming right home after school. When asked, her response has been that she has learned that kids don't have to do those things anymore, or she has said the other kids don't have to do those things, so why should I? It says that she spoke to the school principal, who told her that they are only teaching what the school board advises them and not to specifically disobey their parents. What can I do before this behavior gets any worse? Now, to provide answers to this question and more, our guest, Kiva Schuler, is the founder of the Jai Institute for Parenting, which has been training parenting coaches globally since 2011. And most importantly, she's mom to Miles and Charlotte, who inspired her journey toward her life's work, which is to change the world by changing many ways in which parents parent. Kiva's passion for parenting stems from her own childhood experiences, unfortunately, of neglect and trauma. Now, like many of her generation, she had a front row seat to witness what she did not want for her children. In many ways, Jai is the fulfillment of a promise that she made to herself when she was 16 years old, that when she had children of her own, she would learn to parent them with compassion, consistency, and communication. Kiva, welcome to Answers Network.
Thank you so much for having me. That question hit me right where I live.
Well, And as I said in the introduction, such a perfect guest for our show. And I know that there are so many things that I would love to get into. But before we dive into the main focus of our interview, I believe our listeners and viewers would love to get to know you better. Maybe if you can tell us about your childhood, which essentially is your backstory.
Yeah. I was raised in my parents were divorced. And so my mother is a, you know, New York media dinosaur, women's empowerment, you can do anything kind of role model. My father remarried and had a son, my brother Ian, who's 8 years younger than me. And the parenting that he received was very punitive. It was very inconsistent in that home. There were, you know, rules that applied on Tuesday that, you know, on Thursday were cute. One day when I was just a teenager, I was watching him be punished for being too loud. He was getting Tabasco and soap. And I just thought to myself in that moment that when I became a parent, I would do whatever it took to break these cycles of harm, you know, emotional abuse, physical abuse, relational abuse that really have been the norm in parenting in generation after generation after generation. And so that was kind of the initial impetus. And then, of course, when I had my own kids, I realized that living into that promise wasn't exactly as easy as I thought it was going to be. I have a degree in psychology from Washington University. I was already a life coach. And I thought, well, goodness, if I'm struggling this much to control my temper and to teach my children discipline and teach them the rules and the values that matter to me, I can't be alone. And that realization is really what started the Giant Institute for Parenting.
One of the things that you touched on when you mentioned about different rules, a different rule on Tuesday, what I see there is a lack of consistency. Let's talk about consistency and how important that is.
It's understandable when we think about the day-to-day stressors and pressures that parents are under, right? We're parenting mm-hmm. to the moment. It's the rare parent that kind of takes that longer-term view, plays the long game, and identifies the values that are important for that child to learn in that developmental plane that they're in. And so what happens when we're parenting in the day-to-day is we're being reactive to the conditions and to our internal, you know, resourcing. Have we slept? Are we stressed out? Are we overwhelmed? And so this creates inconsistency. It's not because we're not a good mom or dad. It's because there's not a support system of intention that's guiding the decisions and choices we make. So when we're in a good mood, it's okay that the kids are screaming and jumping on the couch. But when we've had a rough day, it's not.
Yeah, I get it. You know, you also touched on, you know, and again, I brought it up in the introduction, that what you learned was what you were not going to do. And I think that that's really important because I've had conversations with people and we've talked about the things that occurred in our childhood. And again, none of our parents were perfect. But I think one of the biggest things that we can do for ourselves is to recognize that we can learn as much from the patterning and the modeling that our parents give us by doing it right as we can when they do it wrong. Because as you said, okay, I saw these things and decided I'm going to do this. And I saw other things and thought my kids aren't going through that. So let's talk a little bit about how you can gain benefit from whichever situation you come from, which is very possibly a little bit of both.
Yeah, I think that it's always a little bit of both. I think it's also important to recognize that this isn't about making our parents or our grandparents wrong or, you know, bad people. People were doing the best with what they knew. We know so much more now about childhood development, about brain science. We're a much more emotionally wise culture now than perhaps past generations. And so it's important to have this whole conversation without needing to assign blame or shame or guilt or making other people wrong for really doing what has been considered good parenting for a very long time. So that's the first thing that I will say.
Yeah.
The thing about parenting is it comes up against so much of our stuff, right? Our kids are going to push our buttons. They're going to, you know, bring up our past failures or our fears or even our aspirations. And so it's useful to really start to question what we want for our children versus a kind of projection of what we might be attempting to have them play out for us to meet our own needs or to meet our own validation, you know, wanting people to validate us in the world. So I think that's a really good place to start. And then the final thing that I'll say is that most of us were conditioned to respond to stress, to big emotions by watching how our parents did it. And so that's why we train coaches, because knowing different doesn't necessarily mean doing different. To do anger differently, we've got to practice. It's like building a new muscle. To communicate more effectively, we've got to try it on and slow ourselves down and learn frameworks. And so I think there's just so much room for parents to work on ourselves as humans in the name of raising better humans.
I couldn't agree more. And I'm glad now that we know a little bit more about you. Let's go back now to Kathleen in Highland Park's question. You know, what she's, I'm looking at the question again, and it says, you know, she's trying to set boundaries. She feels like the public school teachers are sabotaging, and that she has a 12-year-old that is essentially saying no to most things that she's saying. And then when asked why, her response is that she says she's learning this in school and that the other kids don't have to do it. And, you know, and that she spoke to the principal. What are some of the other things that she can do to try to turn this around? And I think, as she put it, you know, what can I do before this behavior gets any worse?
Absolutely. Whether it's schools, media, social media, television shows, we are up against a tidal wave of other influences bringing their values to our children, mm-hmm. which is why it's more vital than ever that as parents, we do the work of teaching the values that matter to us. We can't change the outside world, right? Not every parent has the opportunity or can take their kids out of public school, right? We can't all homeschool. We have to work. And so this, I think, kind of amplifies the need for parents to teach their children values. Now, teaching values is not making demands. And I think this is where a lot of parents are confused, because when we were kids, if our parents told us to clean our room, we would, because we knew that the consequences would be dire, perhaps, if we didn't. And I think there was also more of a culture of, the authority figure being the one who made the rules. That's changing. And I'm not sure that that's totally a bad thing, right? Like, I don't want my kids to learn to comply to the loudest voice in the room or the most powerful voice in the room. Mm-hmm. But it's still possible to teach them the why. And that's what I think the real distinction is. Because if it's clean your room and there's not a reason, that's where we're going to get into power struggles. But when you're out, like we talk a lot at Jai about doing your parenting when you're off the mat, right? Meaning when it's not the time that you're in conflict, when you're not struggling to get out the door. So at breakfast, you might have a conversation about the value of personal responsibility and talk about why that matters to you as a parent and why it's going to be great for your kids to learn that. And then allow them to contribute to solutions, right? What are some ways that you guys think you might practice personal responsibility? And allow them to be a part of the conversation. Because when they have a voice and they feel that they have been heard and seen, then they're going to want to cooperate. It's their idea.
Yeah. And I like the fact that you brought up the fact that you don't want them to just acquiesce to everything. Then you're not really preparing them for real life. One of the things that I've always talked about as being what I think is one of the most difficult things to do as a parent is you want to teach them to question authority, mm-hmm. but you're the authority. Mm-hmm. So it's this balancing act, I think, that we do as parents, that we want them to thrive. We want them to question authority. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, when you are the authority, what are some of the ways that we can balance that in such a way that, that we get the message across, but again, without falling into some traps to where, as you said, either being the loudest voice or threatening some form of violence.
Yeah, I mean, even threatening, to take their favorite toy away or to not let them go to the party or to, you know, whatever that contrived consequence is that we're trying to use to manipulate another person's behavior, right? Like, let's just call a spade a spade. Mm-hmm. In my book, The Peaceful Parenting Revolution, I actually talk a bit about perhaps moving beyond this idea of parent as authority figure and shifting into the role of being their guide, their mentor, their coach, their growth partner. How can we shift into a power with ecosystem in our family so that our feelings and needs matter and their feelings and needs matter? And as two people in a family, in an hopefully lifelong relationship, we're going to work together to create solutions going forward. It takes away the this, which is, I think, what kids are just rejecting now, not because they don't love us, but because they are being, you know, really told that they have a voice. And so when they don't at home, they're like, hey, mom, wait a second. TikTok told me.
You know, one of the things that you talk about, and I think it's along the lines of what you're saying now, is, you know, you talk about the foundations of peaceful parenting. You know, share with us a little bit about that and how, when you're coaching a family, how the parents can learn to do this and feel comfortable with it.
Before I answer that, I think there's a couple of distinctions that are important so people can really understand peaceful parenting, gentle parenting, conscious parenting, right? Whatever we want to call it, is not an abdication of parenting. So we are still very much parenting. This is not permissive, right? Which is what a lot of people think, that kids are just going to like hang from the rafters and rule the roost and do whatever they want. That is absolutely not the case. Peaceful parenting is also not prescriptive, which can be frustrating for people, right? We want like the black and white, the script, do exactly this all the time. But that's not how humans work. That's not how life works. It's a bit more in the nuance, right? Where sometimes we're going to exert more kind of power over tactics, and sometimes we're going to give a really long leash and allow our children to live into the consequences of the decisions that they make. And so there is a lot of ebb and flow. Mm-hmm. So with that introduction, what I will say is peaceful parenting is way less about what you do, right? It's way less about strategies and tactics than who you are. This is why our work is parent-centric. We're not here to tell anybody how to raise their kids. We support parents to learn some skills like nervous system regulation, like effective communication, like values-led leadership. We teach parents to be emotionally intelligent because children have mirror neurons, and that's how they learn to be emotionally intelligent. And so these foundations are really the inner work of becoming a parent, a leader, if you will, that can parent very effectively without resorting to tools of harm, control, fear, compliance.
You know, and as you're saying that, I was envisioning modeling how important it is that I think we spend so much time thinking about all the things that we have to say, and sometimes you just have to model it. So let's talk about what parents can be doing modeling and how valuable that is.
It takes so much courage and humility to be willing to look in the mirror honestly and notice how many of the behavior patterns that we're trying to correct in our children started with us. I always, the story I tell is at Disney with my kids, you know, probably a decade ago, and there was a family, my heart just broke, and the dad is just losing his mind. I paid so much money for us to have fun on this vacation. And the kids were all crying, and I thought, no wonder our children, you know, lose it. We lose it. No wonder they yell. We yell. No wonder they try to grab control back, because we're taking their power away. And so to answer your question, I'm just always impressed with any parent who's willing to say, you know what? I'm going to take the lens of behavior change off my child for just a hot minute and maybe focus on how I might shift how I'm doing some things, because children do what we do. They don't always do what we say, as we know.
Well, in when my children were not children anymore, but when they were maybe 8 years old, wait, I think my youngest was eight or 10 years old. It was my oldest at that point. And I was a room dad at a very early age for them. And in fact, when I was, they had to change the form because the form said room mom. And then they said, well, we're going to change it because we actually have a man now. During the time for, you know, putting on plays and things like that, I put on a wrap, and this was about the time that the first Men in Black movie came out. And I used the music from that, but I rewrote it. And I wrote it, and my son and his best friend went out dressed like the Men in Black. And it was a message to the parents, because the, and I wish I could remember it exactly, but it was, you know, just remember that everything that you do is what we're watching, and that's what we see. So anyway, it was, and I had many parents afterwards that came up to me afterwards and talked about it and stuff. And some thanked me, some looked at me funny, but, but yes, I, you know, I thought if we can get a message out there rather than the typical type of thing that they have at one of these plays, if we have something to where the parents come away with a message and say, wow, okay, they're looking at me. And yet it was done at a time in which rap made sense. It didn't make sense to me, but it made sense to the kids that were saying it, and probably the, you know, some of the younger parents that were there as well. But I think that's another point that I'd love to touch on is, let's talk about communicating to them in their voice, in something they understand, instead of, you know, using all the words that you know by being around as long as you have, and then not realizing that they didn't understand what you just said.
Yeah. Our coaches are trained with a certain level of childhood development because, you know, obviously children, we are parents to the child that we have. Right, to the age that they are, to their neuronormativity or neurodiversity, to different conditions that children are facing. Don't need to tell you about, you know, anxiety and depression and ADHD, and kids are really up against a lot of stress right now. And so it's important to know there's a phrase that we use called under stress, we regress.
Okay.
And so whether you are a child or an adult and you're in an escalated nervous system state, meaning your face is hot, your heart is beating, maybe you've got a knot in your stomach, even we don't have access to our prefrontal cortex, which is the higher reasoning portion of the brain. Children do not have fully developed prefrontal cortexes until they're into their mid-20s. And so what you're speaking to is what Dr. Dan Siegel refers to as mindsight. It's the science of empathy. And as parents, if we can remember that the person we're communicating with doesn't even have a fully developed brain yet, and when they're under stress, they regress, we want to speak to them in a way that meets them where they are. So people ask all the time, how do I get my 2-year-old to stop tantruming? Or how do I get my 4-year-old to sit still in church? How do I get my teenager to listen to me? Well, when they're under stress, you don't. They literally cannot hear you. And so in our work, it's our job to, number one, regulate our own nervous system, right? Because you all know when you're stressed out and you try to hide it, your kids can feel it. We can feel that for everybody. So we've got to actually learn to calm down ourselves. And then we're going to co-regulate with our children, whether that's like, hey, I'm just going to sit here with my back to your door until you feel ready to talk. Or I have one child who's like needs to be close and one who's like a cat. Like, so I'll say, Charlotte, it's seeming like you need some time in your room for a bit. Is that true? And she'll be like, yep, and off she'll go. And then when she's ready, she'll come out. In that like co-calm place, now we can begin to communicate. But we want to use curiosity as the entry point versus telling, versus making demands, versus labeling or blaming, because that's just going to throw up defenses, which do their job, block communication, right? So love to hear from you. What was going on this morning? What did that feel like for you? What could we do differently next time? Remember, we're trying to lead them to develop self-advocacy, right? Internal, yep. Intrinsic motivation. And they don't learn that by us telling them what to do. They learn that by deciding for themselves what they're going to do and then being supported by their parents to follow through. Best case scenario.
I love it. We're speaking with Kiva Schuler, and her book is The Peaceful Parenting Revolution, Changing the World by Changing How We Parent. So I got a question, because is it revolution or evolution? Or
yes. It's both.
It's both. That's what I thought. Both.
Yes, because it's an evolution, because again, I really do have a lot of grace and compassion for parents who were doing what they are and are still, right? There's so much in our culture that says that, you know, tough love, harsh parenting, using discipline is good parenting, right? And so I understand that, but I think that there's an evolution here that's possible. We live in a different era. We're no longer in the industrial age where success is determined by our ability to follow the rules and fall in line. We're living in a time where creativity, cooperation, risk taking, right? Being willing to use our voice in fighting against injustice, that starts in childhood. And so it's more important than ever that we raise kids in a way that preserves their self-confidence, their self-esteem, their creativity, and raises them to be the leaders that are going to go out into the world and solve the very real problems that they have. So yeah, it's an evolution and a revolution.
I love it. And we're going to take a break, but we will be right back. So stay with us. You're listening to or watching Answers Network.
Conflict International are experts at uncovering the truth. Our specialist team has decades of experience in providing a range of bespoke investigation and intelligence services to companies and individuals. Whether you need professional screening or background checks of employees, due diligence of potential clients or business partners, asset tracing services, or surveillance, Conflict International has a rapid response team on hand to get you to the heart of the matter. Our key strength is in our global capabilities. We can tap into an extensive network of trusted professional investigators based in most jurisdictions worldwide, enabling us to go almost anywhere a case takes us. Conflict International has decades of experience with a diverse range of skills among our team developed from backgrounds in military and security intelligence services, as well as practiced lawyers. Visit our website today at conflictinternational.com to find out more about our services. That's conflictinternational.com. Global reach, local knowledge.
And we're back. We are talking about parenting, and we're really getting into kind of the nuts and bolts of the book and some of the things that that you can learn from the book. And one of the things that you speak and write about is discovering what the parents really want for their kids. And I thought that was very interesting because I think in many cases you'll ask a parent and sometimes they don't know right away. They'll say, well, I want them to be happy and healthy. Okay, that's great, you know, but let's go a little deeper. And I love the fact that in your writing, you do talk about the importance of discovering that. So share a little bit about it.
It's really important because there are so many expectations on parents of what success means or what happiness looks like, especially in certain parts of the country where there's, you know, just an achievement culture that could drown the best of us, right? These kids are being asked to live into really extraordinary ideals. And so I think it's useful as parents who want to provide a different kind of foundation for our kids to really think about what matters to us and kind of, you know, take a minute to notice what is perhaps coming from our family of origin or our community or our culture versus what is authentically ours. Some of these concepts that we discuss or that I discuss in the book are nuanced, right? Of course, we want children to be respectful, but what does that mean? Of course, we want them to be fulfilled, but what does that mean? Of course, we want them to be disciplined, but what does that mean? What does it look like? The more specific we are in what we want to teach our children, the better chances of a positive outcome, because we can actually support them to learn those things versus some vague concept that we haven't even explored ourselves.
Mm-hmm. Well, along these lines, let's talk about when parents push their kids to follow in their footsteps Exactly. And what could possibly go wrong?
It's so understandable. I certainly fell into that trap. I was a dancer growing up and had a career-ending injury in college. And I was just sure that I was going to give birth to the next, you know, ballet dancer extraordinaire. Well, you know, Charlotte came along and she had her own opinions and dreams and things that she wanted to do. And I had to realize that I was placing my unlived, didn't happen future on the shoulders of this little 7-year-old girl. That's not fair. And I think that when we do that, what we risk is trust in the relationship. Mm-hmm. And children feeling that if they don't live into this dream that we have for them, that they are somehow going to lose our love and affection. And so it's a tricky one, right? We want to support our kids to reach their potential, to try new things, to have outlets, to move their bodies and their minds. It's about discernment, right? What is actually for this child, and what's maybe something that I'm doing that's trying to fill a hole inside of me?
And I think that's a great point. And I think there's a couple of different sides of it that I'm thinking about, but it reminded me of one of my sons coming to me because I immediately put them in baseball. I'm a big baseball fan. And so I had them in baseball in Little League, and I was one of the assistant coaches. And at one point, when it was time for the next season, my oldest at the time came up to me and said, "You know, Dad, I really, really know that you really like baseball. I want to do hockey." And it was really hard for him to do that. There's two points here, because at that point in time, I took him to one of the largest sports places, one of those giant warehouse sports places, and put him in all of the hockey gear, just had the guy suit him up. It's like $1,000 worth of equipment that he's wearing, and put him on my arm, and we walked up and down the aisles. And as we walked up and down the aisles and stuff, we came back and we sat down where he had put all this stuff on. And I said, "Here is a piece of paper. This is the schedule." Yeah. They 3 times a week.
5 a.m.
Yeah, they play once a week. You know, they play a game once a week, but they practice 3 times a week. So you know that we're finishers. So should I make the commitment to buy this? If you're going to make the commitment to do it. He said, "You know, I think I'll play soccer."
I love it. I mean, what I love about that story, Alan, is you didn't say no. And to me, this is a perfect illustration of stepping into that role of guide. You showed him. You did not tell him, right? So we can have an idea of how the lesson that we teach mm-hmm. is going to play out. But what a more powerful decision for your son than you had, than had you said, "No way, no how, you're doing it my way because I'm right. the adult." That's right. The shift that I'm talking about. I love that story.
Yeah, but between you and I, inside, I really wanted a baseball player.
And that's our work, right? Our work as parents
exactly.
to grieve that dream, to mourn their decisions. That is not a fair expectation to put on children, that they follow a life path that causes us the least emotional pain. Like, we're the grown-ups. And so, yes, it's sad when a child makes a different choice than we would make for them. Yes, it can be. And it's also their life. It's also a really good way to, again, not to beat a dead horse, but to anchor back into the value. Because in my family, I do have a value of physical movement, right? It is really important to me that my children are moving their body consistently throughout the week. Neither of them are really team sports kids. My son found his way to jujitsu. My daughter kind of did follow me along, right? We go to Pilates together now. But that value of, okay, I hear that you don't want to go to ballet anymore, and you get to move your body every week. So what are some options that you can come up with to do this because it's healthy, it's important? And yep. so that's how it kind of evolves, where we're giving them that feeling of autonomy supported by the underlying value that's in the culture of the family.
Well, I think we're going to be going into discipline here a little bit more because I'm looking, we've got a couple of questions that have come in. And again, I want to thank those people that take the time to send in questions, some of which do it beforehand and then tell me that they're going to listen later on. They're going to listen, you know, over the weekend or whatever, but they still want to get the answer. So this one reads, my brother's two children are out of control. Their four-year-old girl runs around squealing at the top of her lungs, and their six-year-old boy runs around the room, dominating and interrupting every conversation. Being around the family these days, parentheses, especially during the holidays, is almost intolerable. I have small children too, but mine, I believe, are happy and well-mannered. It says nothing like these two little wild creatures. What can an in-law do or say without alienating my fellow family members? And this is from Barry in New York.
It's a tricky one. You know, one of the things about parenting is it's so tender. There's this idea that if we were a good person, we would know how to parent, or, you know, no one would criticize our children. And so you're coming up against shame. And the natural human reaction to shame is defensiveness or righteousness, right? We're gonna like defend our position because we don't wanna feel an uncomfortable feeling. So I tend to be in the camp that really the only children that we can parent by and large are the ones living under our roof. That being said, depending on the relationship that you have with your brother, you might outside of the house, right? Again, that kind of like co-regulated space where everyone's cool, name some concerns from a place of empathy, right? Because as soon as someone feels judged in their parenting, the defenses are going to go up naturally. So that's number one. Number two, if it were me, I would use this as a teaching example for my own children. How does it feel when you see those kids running like that? Ooh, what do your ears feel, right? Because while it may not be an ideal situation for holidays, you're not there all the time. And what a lovely contrast to reinforce good manners and saying thank you and sitting at the table for the children that are under your roof.
How old are your kids now?
Oh, 16 and 18. We just made our college commitment yesterday.
Right. 16 and 18. Mm-hmm. So I'm wondering if you've had this conversation because, and mine are 28 and 26 now, but at about that, at somewhere in the teenage time, at one point in time, they kind of sat me down, but it was something came up or whatever, and they said, you know, Dad, everything isn't a teaching experience. Because I would stop and I'd go, look, guys, we have a teaching experience. And so at some point in time when they were now as tall as me, they're now taller than me. But at that time they were as tall as me and they're looking me in the eye and go, Dad, like, everything really doesn't have to be a teaching experience. Yeah. Have you had that particular conversation yet?
They definitely laugh at me, you know, because I am a very optimistic, positive person. Maybe you could even call me Pollyanna-ish at moments. And so they like to poke fun. But I do see them living into the lessons that I've tried to instill. And I think it really does come down to balance. You know, where is the fun? Where are the shared experiences? You know, I know we're in such the minority, but we sit down together at dinner most every night that we're home, and it's a device-free zone where we crack maybe inappropriate jokes and play music and, you know, share stories. And I think that if you can have that balance of when am I just working toward connection, right? When am I gonna, you know, make fun of myself or let them make fun of me so that when I do need to step into that more parental stance, which of course, you know, we all do, there's, you know, coming from a full cup and it doesn't devolve into feeling like I'm constantly, you know, trying to teach them. I'll have to ask them, Alan. I'll ask them if maybe they're just being nice to me.
Yeah, are they just humoring you now?
What also comes to mind is, you know, and this is why we train parenting coaches as part of becoming a better parent, because when we learn to ask and not tell, maybe it's perceived a little differently. I don't know. If it's an inquiry into their thoughts, their experience, their feelings, versus me assuming that I have any idea, maybe that comes different. But yeah, they definitely poke fun.
Yeah, I love it. Now, one of the things in the book, and it's one of the things that I personally loved, and for everybody out there, if there's nothing else that you get from this, I think there's three specific things that children need from parents every day, and you discuss it in your speaking, you discuss it in your book. Share those and why they're so important.
Thank you for asking that question. I believe that even before the pandemic, we were suffering a crisis of disconnection. I believe that so much of the mental health challenges that children are facing is because this thing has replaced this thing.
Yep.
And so the first thing is presence. Our children, whether they will admit it or not, I hesitate to use the word need, but I will, need to feel us in their presence, with our full presence, meaning we're not distracted, we're there, quality over quantity, with them most every day. I traveled for work when my kids were young, things happen, but when we're in the home, re-establishing family dinners, we used to, when the kids were younger, they would never do this now, but we used to have forced Friday family fun, where every Friday we'd go, go bowling or go for a hike, do something where we could get out of the house. That would not fly anymore, full disclosure. So presence is really important, and lets kids know that they have a safe, secure landing pad to come to so that they run toward us when they get in trouble as they get older and not away from us. Yep. The second thing that they need is the benefit of the doubt. I don't know about you, but whenever I made a mistake as a child, I was pretty quickly told that I was something, right? I was irresponsible. I was rebellious. I was defiant. When we tell our children who they are, they believe us. They still love us, but their identity will start to take on the attributes that we are repeating over and over and over again. So remember what I said earlier, children have undeveloped brains, and under stress, they regress. And so our teenager forgetting to take out the trash may be because every neuron in their brain is rewiring itself and pruning to prepare them for the final phase of brain development, and not because they're disrespecting us. And so if we can give them the benefit of the doubt and get curious, then we might create a support system that says, like, all right, let's put an alarm on your phone. So every Tuesday night at 8 p.m., you get a reminder to take the trash out, instead of labeling that child as something that they may or may not be. So those are the first two. And then the last one, it's a bit of an ideal, but it's unconditional love, right? Showing them that regardless of their behavior, regardless of their achievements, regardless of whether or not they make mistakes, because we all make mistakes, they have our love and support, that it is definable, it is non-negotiable, and it will be with them for a lifetime. That alone gives children such a secure attachment to themselves and us, and I believe sets them up for a lifetime of seeking out those kinds of relationships instead of a lot of the codependency and enmeshment and entanglements that many of us.
Yeah. Now, did everybody hear that? Because this is the kind of gem that you want to reverse, rewind the last 3 minutes. Because if you can do those things, give your undivided attention, give them the benefit of the doubt, and show them love and acknowledgement. If you get nothing else from this, those are the things that are going to make a difference. We've only got about a minute. Time has flown by. Kiva, thank you so much for coming on. And again, for everybody out there, the book is The Peaceful Parenting Revolution or Evolution. You figure it out. And it's changing the world by changing how we parent. And again, thank you so much, Kiva, for not only coming on the show, but for writing the book and doing what we look for in this show more than anything else, making a positive difference in the world. Thank you.
Thanks for having me.
All right. And for everybody out there, be with us next week when we're going to be joined by Richard John Allen as he discusses his new book, Keep Calm and Cope with Grief. It's 9 chapters for managing fear and grief when losing a parent or a loved one. And we've just gone through a pandemic in which there was a lot. Most everybody that I've talked to lost somebody. So this is something that I think will help all of us to be able to figure out how to manage our fear, how to deal with grief in a way that allows us to continue on in a very positive way. And please visit our archives of past interviews at answers.network, or you can subscribe to the show through Apple Podcasts, iHeartRadio, Spotify, SoundCloud, YouTube, Rumble, Spreaker, and so many more. If you like what you hear, please leave a review. It helps us reach more people, and I want you to know we greatly appreciate it. The next time you're on Instagram, Facebook, or Twitter, please remember stop by our page, check out some of our latest shows, and if you like them, please like us and spread the word. For everybody out there, be good human beings and be with us again next week on Answers Network.
You're listening to Answers Network with Alan Cardoza, only on LA Talk Radio.